That verdict was very surprising for all of us, given, you know, what we had seen in the show. So we kind of had to reset for a second and like figure out what's going on here. Netflix kind of expressed the desire to get the show out sooner. It really kind of compressed the schedule down a lot for us to get it out that fast. There were a lot of interviews that just suddenly were like, okay, we're getting this person now. And here's 12 fresh hours of like a brand new perspective just dumped in July or August.
All right, welcome back to the Post Production Club podcast. Well, today we're talking with the editing team behind the Sean Combs, The Reckoning documentary that came out on Netflix. We're going to get to be hearing from Charles Divock Ace, Jeremy Seifer, and Benji Cast Ace. So we've got some really talented editors on this. They came together. They're working on a ton of content happening in real time as the court case was going on. A lot of the stuff that was seeing in the media, they would be working on, you know, simultaneously as things were coming out, which is pretty crazy. And they shortened the post-production timeline in order to get this documentary out sooner to coincide with the court case indictment. And man, the speed at which they worked is just wild. I make a joke that they're working faster than the SNL team. Saturday Night Live guys, you know, are known for just having to turn around things, you know, within hours and days. And these guys are working just as fast. Excited for you guys to hear from them. And yeah, this year's going to be a good one for episodes. Next, we've got a really fun episode after this one with the executive producer and VFX supervisor for Avatar. So that'll be coming out, releasing pretty soon. I'm excited for you guys to hear that. And then just the other housekeeping thing that I wanted to talk about was I'll be at South by Southwest in March. So if any of you guys are going to be attending that, for sure, reach out. We'd love to hang out, meet up. So let's go ahead and dive in. Well, welcome, Benji, Jeremy, and Charles. It's good to have you guys on today.
Thanks.
Tim.
I would love to just kind of like start hearing from each of you on your journeys. You guys have worked like together on a lot of different things in different ways, maybe not all three. Is this the first project that you guys all three kind of coalesced together for the first time?
Yeah. This is the first time that all three of us have worked together. I worked with Jeremy on another project that hopefully is coming out sometime this year for HBO with the same director from Sean Combs, Alex Stapleton. And so we worked together on that. And then I've worked with Benji many, many times, and mostly on The Circus for Showtime, which was like a real-time political series, you know, that, I don't know, aired for like seven, eight seasons, and was a real trial by fire kind of thing. The show was basically you shoot Monday through Saturday, and then it airs every Sunday. And so you're making like a 22-minute documentary in 6 days, which is really, really hard.
My gosh. So the SNL guys have nothing on you.
Yeah, there was definitely times where the showrunner, I would look back, he would be giving me a note, and then I would be doing the note, and I'd turn back, and he was asleep because it was 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday.
Charles, why don't you go ahead, and I would love to hear maybe from each of you guys, maybe introduce yourself and talk a little bit about like your journey as to how you got to like what role you played on the Sean Combs documentary and how you kind of got to where you are today.
So, my name is Charles Divock. I was a supervising editor on the series. And I started a couple weeks after Jeremy. He started up on the first episode and I started up on the second one. And it's mainly because we both had a really good relationship with Alex Stapleton, the director. And so that's how, you know, that's how we started on it. I started as an editor. I don't know, like it's long ago now, but, you know, to go back to like the origin is basically like, I took like one film class in college. I wanted to be, like a lawyer, and I was taking, like a bunch of history classes, and, I took one film class, and I remember cutting my film at night. It was like, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. And I remember looking outside and seeing everybody like coming home from the fraternities, you know, and like they had a great night. And I realized like, oh, like I just had a great night too. And in a much different way. And it was just like, I have to figure out how to do this as a job.
And then you wound up doing that on the circus.
Yeah. Yeah. And then deciding that I'd never want to do a job where you have to work 24 straight hours again. But yeah.
That's crazy. How about Jeremy?
I'm Jeremy Seifer. I was the lead editor of episode one of Sean Combs, The Reckoning. I came to the project through the director, Alex Stapleton. We'd worked together on several projects before. Most recently, a HBO series, which hopefully will be coming out. A doc series that will be coming out hopefully this year. We worked together on a Chelsea Handler special for Netflix. We worked together on a doc series for Showtime called Shut Up and Dribble.
I'd love to hear maybe just like how you got connected to director Alex. What was kind of your journey through up into those pieces?
I was working for a production company in New York, in Brooklyn, called Part Two Pictures. I was their lead editor. And then I was hired onto staff as a senior producer as well. And when I wasn't cutting or writing shows, I worked in development. And Alex came to Part Two to develop a Harry Belafonte documentary for CNN. And we worked together on that, basically, and had a good collaboration. And then maybe a year and a half later, she was already in LA at that time. I'm not sure. But I moved to LA in late 2016. And when she found out I was in LA, she called me and said, I have this, like, the perfect project for you, which was, at the time, the idea was, it was a three-part doc about the NBA draft, and each film was about like a very important historic NBA draft. And she knew I was like a total NBA nerd. That became Shut Up and Dribble. Alex, I think, just has a gift for getting stories. And I don't just mean as like sitting across from someone like getting an interview. I mean, like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone who's like better at sort of on the spot synthesizing ideas, perspectives into something that's really compelling. I mean, she can really, she's incredible at pitching, but mostly it's just because I think it's just there's something very unique and exciting about the way she puts things together. And I think as an editor, you want that in a director. If anything, I think what makes my collaboration with Alex, I think, really work is that she's someone who puts a bunch of stuff down, right? Like a lot of ideas, and doesn't necessarily, as she's talking about like her vision, it may not even be a vision yet, but it's like I'm someone who can sort of take like a bunch of stuff and start to find the connections almost compulsively. Like that's what I like to do. And so I think that's why we work well together. Like she's kind of like a free style, like idea person. And I'm someone who is sort of obsessive about trying to find a structure to ideas.
Last but not least, Benji.
I was thinking about this, and I think I've like probably worked on every form of editing technology through the years. So I'm like going to date myself a little bit. But when I was growing up, you know, back then there was just a video camera and a VCR and an RCA cable, and that was how you edited. You know, that's how we made movies. And you know, through the years I've worked on like Steinbeck 3/4-inch deck-to-deck editing, what was called a D1 online system, which was like, it looked like, you know, the Starship Enterprise. I was an assistant, but I learned how to do it. I can't remember any of that now. I also like worked on the Chiron. So like people use the term Chirons, which is the titles that happen. I actually like worked on the actual Chiron machine, which was like just a antiquated giant box that only did titles that you fed into the online machine, and eventually worked into, you know, the nonlinear world. I went to film school. I was interested in being a director. I tried every box I was producing. I was, you know, trying to write screenplays. And also I like to do experimental film on the side a little bit. But anyway, ultimately kind of came in, wound up in the nonfiction world as an editor. And so that's sort of like the origin story. With regard to this project, I knew some of the guys, Chuck, Evan, who were the editors on it. It's first time really working with Jeremy. We actually didn't really intersect. Like, I kind of came at the end. Jeremy was on for like a great portion of the project. I was really, really, it was a really great experience. Everything Jeremy was saying about working with Alex, like I saw all those aspects too. And it was really, really cool.
That's awesome. So Jeremy, what was it like? You were the one that brought Chuck and Benji on. Is that correct? Am I understanding that correctly?
No, Alex brought me on and Chuck on, because we just worked closely together on this HBO series. And I did not know Benji before this project. Chuck, I believe, Chuck or Evan brought Benji on.
So basically, the way this project worked, like we thought we were going to have kind of a lot of time to kind of find the story and kind of, you know, slowly kind of go through the edit. And we were, and everything was progressing well. And then, when the verdict came down in July of Sean Combs, you know, where he was basically acquitted of most of the charges. And then just like the level of attention that was paid to it, like in media, you know, like it was really saturated about the trial. Like it was like every day there was like a new story about Cassie. There's a new story about like these sex parties and that kind of stuff. And so once that came down and once the trajectory, like the, it was, that verdict was very surprising for all of us, given, you know, what we had seen in the show to have him be acquitted of all that. And, you know, so we kind of had to reset for a second and like figure out what's going on here. And then, Netflix, kind of expressed the desire to get the show out sooner. And so the schedule, you know, and to their credit, they were right. I think like the time that it came out was actually like it landed, you know, pretty well. They wanted to land it like kind of around his sentencing, which was going to take place in October. And so, you know, we ended up pretty close to that in December. It really kind of compressed the schedule down a lot for us to get it out that fast. And the first person I thought of in a compressed schedule who is super, super talented is Benji. Cause I had worked with him on the circus and, he's honestly one of the most brilliant editors I've ever worked with. His mind just works in a different way. And, it's always a pleasure to work with him. And so we had that history of collaborating together and we needed the speed. And that all was like incredibly crucial to making the series what it was.
That is fascinating. That's so, so cool. Benji, were you going to say something?
Yeah. I mean, that's the context with which this all kind of came together for sure. And again, like Chuck and I having had those years together on the circus and the collaborative aspect between editors, we also kind of had trial by fire on the circus in that way too. Like Chuck was complimenting me. I would say the absolute same about Chuck, you know, and one of the cool things in working in an environment where it is collaborative, you do get to like really see what other people are doing and how their minds work. And it can be, I feel like everybody raises the bar a little bit from that and you learn from other people and, you appreciate how each person's approach. So
that's the, you talk about the timeline, the compressed timeline. I want to hear about like the actual edit timeline. Were you guys constantly like recutting as new footage was, you know, made available, legal, or like new info was emerging, or what did that kind of look like throughout the compressed timeline process?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I feel like I was maybe the least impacted by the sort of TikTok of like current events, breaking news, because there was a lot of it. And as Benji alluded to, I actually was, I'm pretty sure the verdict came down in July, right?
Yeah.
It was like, I think it was somewhere in the middle of July. And I had just wrapped on the first episode right around the 4th of July. And so it's not that there wasn't stuff happening that was impacting my cut on the first episode. I just think what Chuck is referring to in terms of like the verdict dropping and like a lot of that, if you've seen the series, it's really the first two episodes. I don't want to say they're just the backstory, but a lot of what Sean Combs was, what he was charged with were, I'm talking about the actual racketeering, the trafficking, drugs, prostitution, a lot of that stuff. And a lot of it comes out of like the allegations around Cassie. That's really the third and the fourth episodes. And so in some ways, without getting into the nitty gritty of, you know, what's in the first episode, like the general scope of it was Sean Combs' childhood, Sean Combs' origins as a producer, as a promoter. You know, it's kind of a portrait of the artist, if you can use that term, for Sean Combs as a young man. And that the storyline really ends with formation of Bad Boy and the signing of Notorious B.I.G. and what that sort of sets in motion, which is a rivalry and a jealousy, when Tupac enters story. And that's where episode two kicks in. And it kind of, so there's a present moving story, a present day story, that we constructed out of this footage that was obtained from a videographer. If people have seen the series, they know exactly what I'm talking about. It's basically Sean Combs in and around Midtown Manhattan penthouse hotel suite in the days right before he was arrested. And so there was a lot of work that went into trying to construct a story that unfolds in the present day and a story about his origins. But in terms of like the breaking news, the verdict and all of the implications of the verdict, I didn't have to deal with that as much as Chuck and Benji.
Yeah. One thing that I would say though, is that a huge component of this was who they were able to interview, who Alex was able to interview. And so one of the big sections on episode one was Joy Dickerson Neal. And she wasn't really ready to speak until probably about what, like 3 weeks before your episode wrapped or so on one. You know, and there was a lot of instances like that where, you know, Alex is developing these relationships with people and they're extraordinarily delicate, and it takes a lot of courage to speak on camera about these things and what happened to you. And, you know, and it has to be, the time has to be right for it. Like, they have to be comfortable. It's something that they want to do, you know? And so sometimes that isn't dictated by a calendar or by, you know, a schedule of when the show comes out. So there were a lot of interviews that just suddenly were like, okay, we're getting this person now. And here's 12 fresh hours of like a brand new perspective just dumped in July or August or September. And so that was the biggest challenge, I thought.
That's wild. That's crazy. Benji, anything to add to that?
Two things. Well, first of all, yeah, so I came on after some of the later interviews had just been shot or fairly recently shot. So yes, it was like scrambling to work some of those voices in. I wasn't as familiar with Alex's process. So one of the interesting aspects, or the interviews are very, very long. And that's, you know, it's, she just like allows the people to speak, and it gives you this very rich material. But it's obviously like a lot to go through and find and locate the pieces that are going to be relevant for the particular moments in the story and this and that.
So talk to me about that process really quick. Like, when you are given that much stuff, like, what does it look like for you guys as collaborators in your role specifically to find that good stuff?
As collaborators, I'm not sure exactly, but I mean, obviously we all go through and probably all of us, because we were all working with the same interviews, maybe pulled different sections, selects, worked a scene. And I would say that perhaps sometimes when we hand off scenes, we're restructuring, somebody inherits something that someone else worked on, they may revisit the interview and find a piece that was like, oh, this is really what's going to kind of elevate this and do the thing that we're having a hard time figuring out how to make that work. So that's one aspect, I would say.
Yeah. One thing I think I found just useful is like, I would have like a bin, like a For Jeremy bin, or like For a Benji bin, or Evan Wise, who's another editor on it, like a For Evan bin. And like, just if I saw something in the interviews that was like particularly useful for the episode that they were working on, or a piece of archival, I would just throw it into a bin and just send a Slack and say like, hey, saw this, dropped it in your bin. And these guys would do the same for me. It's just super helpful to, you know, when you can't get eyes on like everything all the time, and you just get like another fresh perspective that's like, oh, this is interesting, take a look at this.
I think a lot of times us as editors, we're just kind of like, we just make decisions more intuitively, and it's just kind of like, oh, that's interesting to me, or that's going to serve the story well. If you guys were to actually like try and quantify how you decide like what's going to work and what's interesting, what's worthy of being pulled as a select or not, like what would you say when it comes to storytelling, especially in this instance?
It's a good question. I think that the it kind of gets to the core of what documentary editors do, is make decisions about what pieces you need to tell a story, and then how to put those pieces together in a way that the pieces form like a puzzle, a picture that is ultimately compelling to sort of see how these pieces fit together, and in some ways satisfying. When the pieces are put together, you kind of see something, you see finally the parts form a whole. But stepping back from the sort of metaphorical, I don't know, I think maybe your audience might be interested to know from my perspective, as someone who's been doing this for a long time, you know, I'd say at least 20 years, really. I've seen a real evolution in the whole process of making selects, especially with interviews. It used to be that you would have, again, this is my experience, like you would show up as the editor and there would already be a bunch of stuff on paper, whether that was like a script. It was much more common when I was coming up for docs. It was kind of like this weird hybrid of news and sort of cable docs, where things tended to be more narrated or hosted. So there was copy written for, you know, for voiceover or narration. And then there were interviews for which there were transcripts. And then a producer would make a bunch of selects. And then you, or sometimes the assistant editor, would pull a bunch of stuff. And then it really became sort of how to illustrate or cover stuff with B-roll and make it kind of snappy. And I think in my experience, like that role of the producer making selects, like it doesn't exist like it used to. More and more, I think editors who are doing things at this level are expected essentially to write. Like you're the writer. So when Benji and Chuck were describing these interviews, these very long interviews, what we're really looking at are script sync transcripts, you know, on the Avid. So it's basically a transcript where you click on the transcript and it pulls up the interview clip on the viewer on the Avid. And so we all have our own process of how to sort of sift it and select it. Like I have my own process in terms of how to get stuff from basically the words of the interviewee into the timeline. While the process, I think, is different for each editor, ultimately, it does come down to storytelling and just your instincts. Not unlike writing, there's no way you get it right the first time. It just doesn't come out of your brain. And it's like, oh, I figured it out. You drop in a bunch of pieces, and it's always a process of, I think, whittling it down. There's something called string outs that we all work with. Sometimes, I would say often, an assistant editor will do a first pass. I like to, you know, have assistants go through an interview and topically find a bunch of stuff that I know I'm going to want and, you know, cut it down, cut out the ums and ahs and the false starts, and at least give me something manageable to work with. And then I sort of take it from there. So it's very much like, you know, I often feel like more and more of my projects basically involve writing on Avid.
Yeah. Definitely in the last, I don't know, 5 to 7 years, that seems like that more of what we do. And I really enjoy it. You know, I think that's one of my favorite things about editing is writing it, you know, and telling the story of it. So yeah, I mean, it's, I guess when I'm going through footage, like what would ring a bell for me is kind of, I guess I always think of it, like, what would I want to watch, you know, what pulls you in immediately? You know, those are the things that I pull. Like, what do I want to know about? What is the, like, oh, I didn't know this. So this storyline is really fascinating. And so it's constantly just like, I don't know. I'm kind of like making a show for me that I would want to watch. And so you pull things like that. And then you kind of pull like logistical things that like help tell the story, but that, you know, help explain things. Those are really important, you know, that, you know, and then you just pull emotional things too. I mean, it's awesome when it's logistical, story, and emotional all at once. Like those are like the holy grail moments, but it's rare that all those moments contain all three. You know, you just try to let yourself feel emotion and the pauses, and then tell the story at the same time and in a clear way so that people can understand what's happening.
I'll just add, there's like two phases. One is that has to do with the amount of time you have too, you know? So my preference is always to have time to actually like watch through everything and do this process of pulling what stands out. And if you have the opportunity to do that, which is ideal, you're kind of operating on two levels. You're like operating on what the interview that you're looking at is saying, what that person's saying, but you're also like thinking about the broader, the bigger story simultaneously. So you're kind of like thinking about how it's going to serve the overall narrative and as well. And one of the cool things about working, having that opportunity to really go through it, any kind of material, whether it's interviews or footage or verite or archival, is that process of discovery, because you may have like an outline. This is what this story is going to be, or this is what this scene's going to be, or this is what this act is going to be. And you're like working towards that. And then you come across something that sort of is like, oh, this actually will be really good. It doesn't quite fit in. So maybe you put that on the side, you pull these things. And sometimes that can kind of like, you know, as Jeremy was saying, in the sense of sort of like being a writer, I think it is analogous to that process of writing sometimes, where you kind of like discover something new and kind of colors the story in a new way that you weren't expecting.
I'd love to talk a little bit about the technical side of things. That's all awesome info, I think, just from like the artistry of editing. And it's cool to hear your guys' perspective on all that. Were you all working in the same like location? Were you remote? How was it passing stuff back and forth?
Yeah, all remote and all working on Avid. Yeah, all in the same project, but just in our own like edit folders kind of within, you know, and then everything's kind of divided by that, you know, and Avid does a really great job at kind of handling multi-users, which I've found that Premiere does not, but that's my own.
And then if you guys had to guess, like how much footage do you think you ended up having in terabytes? If you had to guess.
I don't even know what it equates to terabytes. I think we had something like 1500 hours.
That's wild. That's crazy. I was just curious, yeah, what type of scale, scope we're looking at. So that was kind of like you guys working together as a team, like interrelationally, you know, how that all worked. How was it like you guys as a united kind of like editorial team working then with like Alex, other producers? Was there like any collaboration with them that drastically changed how things were working? Were they pretty hands-off? Like, talk to me about how that worked.
I think the general workflow for each of the four episodes, I think they all started out similar, which is like, you know, you have to get the rough cut, right? You have to build this cut. And generally, the editors are pretty independent at that phase. Like I said, like, we're not like dropping in with a script. While I've had projects that are more scripted, this was definitely not one of them. You're starting with a treatment for the series, and you might have like a sort of individual episode treatment or beat sheet, but it's really just a description of the story as the director, you know, sees it unfolding. But it's such a working document. It's like once you start cutting, it's like having an outline, basically. So I would say in terms of working with, you know, Alex and then her right hand executive producer from House of Nonfiction, Stacey Scripters, also, she's incredible. And I mean, she's much more the go-between Alex, whose focus was really split between the edit and the field and trying to get interviews. And at times, you know, that required all of her focus. So you had Stacey working more closely with the editors. You had Alex Maestral, who someone I knew from New York, from Part Two Pictures, I believe was an EP of Post. She was very much hands-on working with the editors, making sure we were all sort of more or less on the same page and not, you know, as much as we could, not sort of stepping on each other's toes in terms of working on the same beats and that sort of thing. That didn't really happen too much. But I think, as always, once you get to rough cut and once the network, you know, sees the cut, like a lot more eyes are on the project. I mean, it's just part of the job. A big part of the job is like, you know, you can put something together and think I figured it all out, but it's only figured out until someone tells you to figure it out again, right? You know, I'm not saying that the network notes were that harsh or negative, but you know, Netflix gets really involved, and there's a lot of problem solving all the time. And generally, I would say, you know, since we're working remote, like there's no one for the most part, like in the room. It's meetings like this one, and you know, a lot of times we would have to figure stuff out as best we could and problem solve together. I think that's where the collaboration really comes in. It's not that we're necessarily working in real time on each other's timelines. It's that we're getting on Zoom or picking up the phone and talking about some of the creative and editorial challenges and helping each other through them.
At least for me early on, like the most important things were the phone calls with Alex, you know, where you just talk to her for an hour and a half and just kind of throw ideas at her like, oh, like, you know, I read this interview, you know, and we talked about Suge Knight this way, you know, and, you know, and what do you think about presenting him like this? And then, and, you know, and then she would present her idea, you know, and it, you kind of go back and forth, and because she's so immersed in the subject, like more, you know, like, cause she's, that's really, you know, one of her real talents is her level of immersion into each of her topics. You know, she gives it a, you know, an entirely different perspective, and then you try to meet that perspective. And so it's these like kind of mind melts and conversations that, you know, are really important, you know, and like Jeremy was saying, she's giving a lot of like kind of top line stuff, like, and a lot of like really great ideas. And then it's kind of our job to synthesize all those ideas into something that you can watch and understand, you know, and then the process kind of changed once the time, like once the schedule got compressed. So Because it was very much like each editor was on their own episode. And then once the schedule got compressed, we couldn't do that anymore, you know? And so Benji and I and Evan were working on episode 4 for like 3 weeks straight, you know, without much of a break, you know, and working on different pieces and constantly like exporting stuff and watching each other's cuts and seeing like, all right, well, this is where it's going to end. This is where it's going to start, and then talk about it and then pitch ideas. And so the process changed dramatically once the timeline got compressed and we had to get stuff out and we had multiple editors on each episode.
With the collaboration of like producers and stuff, 50 Cent was an executive producer on this. I was seeing some comments and memes and all that stuff online about how it was like, oh, the juvenile way was to make a diss track, and then like the mature way is to make a documentary as far as the like rivalry goes and everything. Talk to me about like how true that is, how much that's just like his involvement was sensationalized. Like, yeah, I'm curious from like your guys' like actually in the weeds perspective, like what that all was like.
I mean, my perspective, you know, like I personally didn't have a, you know, a whole lot of interaction with 50, but everything, Alex was always the conduit through 50. So, and she had a ton of interaction with him. She was always like the guiding force of the project, and he was great with that. Like he gave her the control to make the story. You know, and I know she was always like running stuff by him, but it always was filtered through her, you know. And I think Jeremy, he gave you some specific notes on one, I think, that ended up helping, right?
Yeah. Through Alex, he was like that's what EPs generally do, is they watch cuts. They're not often in the room, not often in the field. And that was the case with, yeah, I guess before I get to like, you know, this, some of his specific feedback, you know, I think you have to understand like your point about like this being sort of like a diss track. It's just such a sort of meme worthy sort of idea. And I think it's great. I mean, 50 is, you know, all about like, I mean, he's kind of lethal on social media. That's like his brand. But this isn't social media. And I think anyone who sees the film, I think that in some ways it's kind of like the perfect bait on the hook, is to know about the beef, to know about some of the disses that have been going on over the years. This is not a diss track documentary, like more than any other thing that has come out about Sean Combs in the last year at least. And there have been quite a few. This is the one that really presents, I think, Sean Combs as a complicated person and humanizes him. But there's no world in which you can really tell the truth about Sean Combs without also telling the truth about what he did to many, many people. So I think it's kind of great that you had 50 sort of being front center in terms of like the beef between Sean Combs and 50, because that pulls people in, you know? And once they're in, I think that's been one of the more gratifying things about the series, is that, whoa, like I didn't realize this was going to be so emotionally complex and deep. And then back to 50's sort of own feedback. I mean, he was very emphatic about getting the history right, getting the history of hip hop right, and understanding Sean Combs' place in that history. And that's not him saying Sean Combs, you know, ain't shit. And this, no, it's actually him saying, no, Sean Combs came in a period of time when hip hop was blowing up. People don't understand, like hip hop didn't even exist in a commercial sense when he was coming into the game, and he helped commercialize it. But then there's this relationship between hip hop and the streets. And that's not, Sean Combs is not one of these guys from the streets, but he found a way to sort of bottle and package the streets. And I think that comes through very clearly in the first two films. And that's a lot of 50s. Input, pushing storytelling in that direction.
That's really insightful. And it's cool to hear just like the deeper take on what his involvement looked like and kind of the ethos behind it all. Okay, so this has been really fascinating. I'm super grateful for you guys each sharing a little bit about your process. And what it looks like to work on this. As kind of a final question, I'd love to kind of go around and hear, maybe starting with you, Benji, like what advice you would give to editors that are looking to work on documentaries at a high level and within a team working, you know, at the level that you are. What advice would you give to them?
I would say, I mean, I would go back to what I was saying a little bit earlier as a starting point. I think finding the time and the patience to like go through material, think about it as a starting point, it's like an important foundation, in my opinion, toward everything else. For, you know, versus just trying to be fast and just trying to do things quickly, hastily, which is a thing that's like tends to be valued a lot. Like, oh, they can cut it fast, right? And you know, sometimes that's really important too, and I don't want to discount that. But yeah, my advice would be in terms of like editing as a craft, editing as an art form, looking at raw material and taking the time to go through it and thinking about it, which of course is sometimes a privilege to have that time to do. But that would be my starting point. And then with regard to collaboration, I do think that one of the hard parts sometimes it's like you kind of have to like check yourself and you kind of like have to be open to accept that when you see someone else doing something great, like, oh, that's great. And they actually like that, like I'm going to take that and like learn, like that's a better way to do it. Like, I think in a lot of phases of life, it's hard to find that. But with regard to collaboration, I think that finding a way to evolve in that direction can be beneficial.
That's good.
One thing I've learned, I'm still learning, there is something about getting into this field that you can't go far without encountering the, I don't want to call it an obstacle or pitfall, but let's say the challenge of other people's feedback. You're going to work hard on something and someone's going to look at it, and in one way or another, they're not going to like it or they're not going to get it. And that is part of being an editor. And I think the ones who really kind of get to like the next level are the ones who can take that feedback, not take it personally, and still stay true to the thing. I really think it's very important to be open to criticism, but it's in some ways more important to stay true to your own ideas and stand up for your ideas. Like, I think this day and age, there's a lot of people, like, let's call them suits, right? Like people who think they know, and I'm not saying they don't know, but I think it's very important to remember that you as an editor are being hired for your choices, and it's okay to defend the choices you make and stand up for that. Sometimes people just don't get it because they're not paying close attention. So sometimes I think it's as important as being able to accept criticism. That's very important, but it's also important, I think, to stand up for your own ideas.
That's good.
Yeah. I think one thing with criticism, I think it's the hardest thing about being an editor is listening to criticism. Like it's awesome when it's all positive, but that doesn't get you better either. You know, so, you know, there's been instances where I've gotten a note and I'm like, oh, this is dumb. This doesn't make any sense. And then I try it and it's like, oh, that actually worked. Oh, okay. You know, so I think it's important to take every note seriously, you know, and look at it, but then at the same time, you know, like actually try it earnestly and try to understand where it's coming from. And then once you try it, once you see and see if it doesn't work, then, you know, then defend it, you know, and I think that's important because you have to, you know, at this level, you have to have confidence in your choices and you have to have confidence, you know, you have to have the confidence to sit on a shot for 10 seconds when everyone else is saying cut. You know, that's something that I didn't have when I first started. The confidence in that, like that's bold sometimes to have no music for the first 2 minutes, you know? So you need that confidence and that ability to just make a decision like that. That I think that's one of the biggest things to like get to another level. And I think also inherently with with documentary, like it's all storytelling. Like that's the key to it all. And so I've just found that I try to like absorb many different kinds of stories and just try to understand how they're told. So whether it's like a comic book, whether it's like a cartoon with my kids, whether it's a poem, whether it's a 5-hour long documentary, scripted films, they're all telling stories and they're all doing it in a myriad of different ways. And you can kind of learn a little bit from each one and how they're doing it.
That's great. Chuck, Benji, Jeremy, you guys are an awesome team, and it's cool to get a peek behind what it was like to work on this series. Thank you for all the hard work on it and for putting this out in the world. Thanks for taking the time to be on this podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.